An Evening with the Sladdens, 1915, Part 1.
They said it would all be over by Christmas 1914, but it wasn't.
Christmas 1914 at Seaward House had passed quietly, with three of the Sladden sons who were in active service. George Sladden, the third son, and about to celebrate his 29th birthday, had joined the Civil Service Rifles on the outbreak of war. He was still in Watford at the beginning of 1915 and wrote to his father on the 27th of January.
My dear father, we're still here waiting on events. The big move seems to have begun, but I gather that it is to be fairly leisurely. So if we don't go till the latter end of it, there is a prospect of our being here for another month. I don't know that I'm sorry. Now that they have kept us here so long, they might just as well delay our departure until the weather conditions on the other side are slightly improved. Last night they began taking precautions with regard to the lighting in Watford, similar to those recently exercised in London. I think there was some idea that the Kaiser's birthday might be celebrated by an aerial raid on Hendon, which is, of course, quite near here. Love to all, from your affectionate son, George.
30-year-old Arthur Sladden, the second son, was a doctor with the Royal Army Medical Corps at a base hospital in Nantes. Having had a few days leave in England at the beginning of February, he wrote on the 11th of February to tell his mother of his safe arrival back in France.
My dear mother, the authorities at Havre have no orders for me, so I had to return here. And we still await instructions. I wouldn't like to be in the army for a permanency. One feels far too much like a very small cog in a very slowly moving machine. And one's importance at first depends entirely on rank and not on capacity. However, I suppose someday they'll discover that I can be more usefully employed elsewhere than here. Meantime, it's very dull. My short leave was very refreshing. I was lucky to get it, I think, as all ordinary leave is now stopped. With very much love to you all, from your son, Arthur.
Eugenie Sladden wrote to Juliet, her youngest daughter, who was at boarding school in London.
My dear Juliet, I'm very sorry that it was not possible to arrange for you to see Arthur on Saturday. It was a great disappointment for you, dear, but I'm going to cheer you up with a little bit of news, which I'm sure you'll be pleased to hear. That is, that you may become an aunt in August or September. I'm so glad there are expectations, and Arthur and Mary are both very happy about it. Wipers is quite well and getting fatter. He's quite good in most ways, but we can't get him quite clean in his habits yet, and I have had to use the whip once or twice. What do you think of Kitchener sleeping in the kennel with Wipers the other night? And yet he's terrified of him in the day, if Wipers flies at him wanting to play. Much love, dear, from your loving mother, Eugenie N. Sladden.
Wipers, in case you hadn't realised, was a new puppy at Seaward House, and Kitchener was the cat. 24-year-old Cyril Sladden, the youngest son, who was with the 9th Worcestershires, had been at Tidworth training camp, but by February he had moved to billets in Basingstoke. Cyril was billeted at the vicarage, Old Basing, and wrote to his mother on the 14th of February.
My dear mother, I am sure you have been thinking me very naughty indeed to leave you so long without any news. There are a good many difficulties involved in having the men in billets, but it is well worthwhile, as the men are so much more comfortable and happy, and the change will do them a lot of good. I learned from last night's orders that we are moving next Saturday, when we shall march to Blackdown and occupy new huts that have been put up there. These are close to the Purbeck Ranges, I believe, and it is for further shooting practice that we are going. Thank you for mending my socks. I hope I hadn't let them get too bad. I shall be glad of a new pair or two. Best love to everybody from your affectionate son, Cyril E. Sladden.
In peacetime, four of the Sladden siblings, Jack, Kathleen, George and Cyril, lived at 12 Charleville Circus, Sydenham. With George and Cyril having joined up, it was a much quieter household. The second daughter, 33-year-old Kathleen, wrote to her mother on the 14th of February.
My dear mother, I am sorry to hear you've been having a cold, and hope a day or two in bed has put it right. I do not suppose you went to church today, but I dare say you read the Psalms. I had a few lines from Cyril on Thursday, written very late at night after a long day. He was driven to write by dire need of a pair of pyjamas. Jack and I have had a quiet weekend. Today was wet, but cleared up in the afternoon, and Jack and I went for a walk about 3 miles through Dulwich Park, the longest walk I have been for a long time, and I hardly felt any rheumatism, so I really think it is practically well. I have been wearing with much comfort some velvet shoes, boots almost, which come right up the ankle, very cosy and warm, and edged with fur, and I think it has done the ankles good. My legs and arms have been much better too, especially the last 3 or 4 days. Your loving daughter, Kathleen. P.S. We are very pleased indeed about the news of Mary's expectations. I imagine you are very delighted at the prospect of becoming a granny at last.
On the 24th of February, 35-year-old May, the eldest daughter, wrote to her youngest sister, Juliet, affectionately known as Betty, giving her news of home.
My dear Betty, thanks for your letter. I will answer it at once in case you're still in bed, because letters are extra nice at such times, aren't they? You are quite in fashion, for about 3/4 of the world seem to be having colds just now, some having to stay in bed and some not. Poor little Ma, he's likely to be in bed for a week or two yet. Her cough didn't get any better, so we had Dr. Leslie to see her yesterday. He sounded her and says the old patch on her lung has got a little active again and it must be quietened down. And to do that, she must stay in bed until the cough is better and the temperature is quite down. George will have to go and sit with her in the room, as I'm afraid there is no chance of her being up while he is here. It is very nice that he can get a full weekend here and a day at Sydenham too. Father has written to ask him if he can get here in time to speak at a war meeting at the school that evening. I hope he will. Both Cyril and Arthur have already addressed one of these meetings most successfully. I'm glad you've got your hand in sock knitting. Probably you will find it quite easy now you've done one. There seems to be a pretty constant demand for socks all the time. The whist drive the other day brought in about £7, which is all to go towards sending comforts and things to local soldiers. So Ethel must get her wool and set people knitting again. Mary wrote cheerfully to us. Don't you feel very pleased at the prospect of being an aunt? We're very pleased about it here. Ethel and Mary went over to Birmingham and saw Mila last Saturday and had a lovely day for it. Mila was full of spirits as usual, they said, though looking rather tired. Kathy had sent her a nice box of eatables, biscuits, meat juice, chocolate, etc. All nourishing things. She said it was like a box packed for a soldier at the front. Very much love from your no longer very sniffly sister, May.
Mila was 27-year-old Amelia Brown Constable, Cyril's fiancée, who was a nurse at Birmingham General Hospital. The eldest son, 36-year-old John Dilnopsladden, known as Jack, was still living at Sydenham and working for the civil service. He had joined the Inland Revenue Volunteer Force and wrote to his mother telling her of a training session.
My dear mother, I am glad you were able to get to church yesterday. It has been bitterly cold here for the last 3 or 4 days, and the wind is so piercing one could hardly keep warm walking. The Inland Revenue Training Corps had a very energetic afternoon on Saturday week at Hampstead Heath. We marched there taking about 1.5 hours with 2 short halts. On arrival, we did some extended order drill, attacking an imaginary enemy position in most gallant fashion, with short rushes till a fence prevented further progress. Then, with the enemy again in front of us, we turned around and came back again in similar manner. The small boys on the heath were most enthusiastic and wanted to join in too, and I think we must have caused a good deal of amusement to all the people about there. Some of the men were game enough to march all the way back, most, however, myself included. But we'd done enough and returned by train. I was beginning to feel stiff and was rather breathless after running the best part of a mile. We're pretty busy now, though 2 hours overtime was found to be excessive, and we are at present only doing 1 hour. Saturday is being granted only on condition that one is going out of London and that the work is put in at another time. With love to all, I remain your affectionate son, John D. Sladden.
Juliet Sladden, aged 17, was a pupil at The Grove, a boarding school in Highgate, London. As usual, Juliet had her own take on Jack's training and wrote to her mother from Sydenham, where she'd been staying for the weekend.
My dear little mother, I have been spending a very jolly weekend here as usual. I got over for lunch on Saturday, as I have no classes after 11. Kath and I went for a good long walk in the afternoon, over to Dulwich and into the picture gallery there, and took a bus back. Jack was spending the afternoon crawling about Hampstead Heath, learning to hide behind a blade of grass, and such like accomplishments. So we had tea, and the whole evening until supper time, alone, together, and gossiped hard all the time. I'm going to knit George a pair of socks when I have finished the pair I'm doing now. I believe a pair lasts about 3 days or so at the front line, so he will be glad to have some, I dare say. I don't suppose they will be done before he goes, but I shall send them. Tell Ethel she doesn't deserve a letter, for she hasn't written home since BC 500, so I'm not writing to her. With much love to you all, ever yours affectionately, Betty.
Ethel Sladden, aged 32, was a third daughter. We said last year she wasn't a very good letter writer, and as you can see, her letter writing hasn't improved. For just over half a year, George had been in training in Hertfordshire. Then suddenly came the orders to move to France. He wrote to his mother on the 6th of March.
My dear little mother, when the army does things, it always does them suddenly, hurriedly, and almost without warning. Yesterday morning, the prevailing impression was that we should not be moving much before the end of the month. Everything was quiet and peaceful. Rumours were at a greater discount than they have ever been since the beginning of the war. Suddenly, at 7 p.m. last night, in strolled a messenger from the orderly room. Three wagons wanted at once to go to St. Albans and draw various stores. Only that, still no rumours, but the unusual urgency of the business seemed remarkable. With as little delay as possible, I salved three drivers from the various spare time haunts, for of course 7 p.m. is after duty, and pulled out on the road at 7:30. Arrived at St. Albans, the town was thick with rumours. We were off on Monday, on Tuesday, on Wednesday, next week, this week, last week, not at all, al capo, defino, prestissimo. I smiled and said that probably all these tales were incorrect, that in any case Monday was quite improbable. But when we got back here at 1:15 a.m, I found that the whisper of Monday was becoming a shout, that the rumours were crystallising into fact. And this morning it is definitely given as an order that all men must be recalled from leave by telegraph, and that we hold ourselves ready to move to France tomorrow. Wasn't I lucky to get my leave in the nick of time? A great many men have had none at all. But there's no downheartedness about it. We have been straining upon the start so long that everybody is willing to give up anything in order to get over water. We are all gloriously cheerful. I do not know Boo's address, or I would write to him. Tell him I'm frightfully bucked at going out before my younger brother, though I hope he will follow after at a reasonably close interval, even as he did 25 years ago. Well, goodbye, little Ma. Wish me luck, as of course you do. Much love to you all. Your affectionate son, George.
Boo was the affectionate nickname for younger brother Cyril. In Badsey, a telegram arrived at Seaward House on the 10th of March. Eugenie dashed off a quick card to George.
My very dear boy, we have just got your telegram telling us that you're really off, and I will scribble a line on the chance of it reading you just to wish you Godspeed. We shall, of course, be most anxious to hear what part of the world you are sent to, and any information that you may be able to give us. I'm so glad that we had you at home for a day or two, but I'm very sorry you did not manage to see Betty. The poor child will be very sad to think that you are really gone. Goodbye, my darling boy. God bless you and keep you from all harm, and bring you safely back to us, if it is his will. Much love, dear George, from your loving mother, Eugenie N. Sladden.
Spring 1915 on the Western Front, and the Germans still occupied large areas of France and practically all of Belgium. The French commanders were determined to reclaim the territory occupied by the Germans. Large numbers of troops began to make their way from England. The civil service rifles arrived on the Western Front on the 18th of March as part of the 47th London Division.
My dear old Bet, did you think I'd gone away without writing? I'm rather afraid you did, for of course they told you from home that we were expected to go last Friday. There was a slight delay, however. I'm told there was a difficulty in getting all the transport boats that were required, so some troops had to be held up a few days. Now, however, here we are, really on our way to somewhere in France. Half the battalion is on this train, and the rest follow on another train about 2 hours behind us. It seems quite an ordinary and commonplace business, this going to the front. Except for our exceeding cheerfulness at getting away on the move at last, and the extraordinary warm farewell that we get all along our line of route, it feels very much like an entrainment for the familiar annual training. I had thought that nowadays the public viewed the departure of troops very calmly and almost apathetically, but that is far from the truth. Watford naturally gave us a good send-off, but all along the line also there has been, without cessation, a continual cheering and waving, not to speak of a wholesale blowing of kisses from women and girls of all ages and descriptions. I begin to feel we are best out of reach in the train, or our popularity might prove embarrassing. Much love from your affectionate brother, George.
Meanwhile, Arthur had returned to the No. 9 General Hospital in Rouen, where he had been based before Christmas. He wrote to his mother in mid-March.
My dear mother, I've completed the circle and come back to No. 9 and Rouen. In all probability, I'll be here some time. The hospital has just taken possession of huts built for it, on a very large scale. Room for 750 patients. Owing to the move from tents to huts, there are at this moment no patients in, but we no doubt shall get convoys quite soon. We have quite a nice officers' mess, and have buildings round three sides of a square. The sides contain bedrooms, 12 in all. When full, we'll share between two. In each wing, a bathroom is being installed. The centre block has a mess room and a club room and kitchen behind. The wards are long buildings to take about 30 beds and arranged much as in an up-to-date hospital at home. There is a pathological lab and a dispensary, etc., and various rooms for office work. We are on high ground overlooking the town, and I should think in summer it will be dry and hot, not to say dusty. In our square, we are starting a garden, which will be a very nice recreation in spare time. Some of the canvas camps, which have been here all the winter, look very neat and have planted small fir trees about. With much love to all, from your son, Arthur.
George wrote his first impressions of France.
My dear father, this is the first opportunity I've had of writing since we've been over here. We had a very quiet journey on the boat and arrived quite early in the morning at the port of our destination. It was a less troublesome business over unloading the horses than I anticipated. We are billeted some little distance from the front, within sound of guns which I can hear as I write. I'm currently sitting in the kitchen of the house that owns the barn where I'm billeted. I am taking great delight in the local colour of my surroundings. The most ignorant man would know that he was in France directly he opened his eyes in the room. Red-tiled floor, uncovered, black-beamed ceiling, a wonderful and admirable stove projecting right out into the room, stock-pot standing on it as it always stands night and day, bowls in lieu of cups standing on the big press, a crucifix rising in the midst of them, great flat round loaves of bread on a shelf. I have just had dinner with the family by invitation of Madame, who does credit at the fame of her race as a nation of cooks. First of all, of course, is la soupe, a delicious vegetable soup drawn from the depths of the pot that stands always on the stove. Vegetable soup indeed, not thin liquid with one slice of carrot floating in it. Mother can make quite good vegetable soup, but even hers is almost commonplace compared with this. Then fresh pork boiled with potatoes, harvest beans and savoury herbs, and let not the French mustard therewith be forgot. To drink, Normandy cider, and finally un pistol, that being the local name for black coffee with a dash of rum. All share this meal from youngest to eldest, except the pistol, which was reserved for the elders only. Love to you all, your affectionate son, George.
On Easter Sunday, Juliet, who was at home in Badsey for the holidays, wrote to May, who was visiting Aunt Lizzie in Eastbourne.
My dear May, thanks awfully for your nice letter. I feel rather a little wretch not writing to you for Easter. But oh, we have been busy, that I really didn't have a minute. On Saturday morning, about 10:30, we got a wire from Boo to say that he and Mila were coming after all. Of course, we were delighted, but it meant rather a scramble nevertheless. It is very jolly having Cyril and Mila here for Easter, and we are spending quite a happy time. Ethel is such a very strenuous person. I find I can't keep up with her perpetual motion system. I don't mind working like a galley slave in the morning and doing a few odd things afterwards, but she continually runs after me all evening with, "Just come and help me for a minute. Betty, it won't take more than a minute or two," but really it takes hours. I wouldn't grumble if I thought it was really necessary, but I don't think it is personally. Wipers is a great acquisition in the household, I think. He keeps us all lively. Hope you'll have a good rest at Eastbourne and come back quite refreshed. I must go and get ready for church now. I don't really want to go very much, but Ethel wants me to come along with her. So I must leave my multitude of letters and the Swinburne poems I'm dying to read until another day. Love from your affectionate sister, Betty.
Mila, Cyril's fiancée, was soon to commence a new job at Bournebrook Military Hospital. Just a short time after visiting Easter, she'd been granted further leave and wrote to Cyril from Seaward House. She felt very much at home in Badsey, as a few years earlier she had come as a lady's companion to Mrs. Ashwin, who lived across the road at Poole House.
My own dear sweetheart, it's delightful to be in the old home again. It is all so peaceful. Your father has been pruning roses and May has been helping him, while Kath and I wandered around very lazily. Dear old Mrs. Ashwin saw us strolling down what I call the Lover's Walk, and she came over to chat to us. Wandering round the garden with Kath was very nice, but not quite so nice as wandering round with a certain young lieutenant of Kitchener's new army. You naughty boy, not to tell me you had been promoted. It was gazetted in yesterday's Times, and was pointed out to your father by someone in Evesham, who congratulated him about it. I wonder if you knew it was settled, or if you read it in the papers, just like other people. It must have been rotten for you saying goodbye to the little mother and your father, and Ethel and Betty. It will be the first really serious parting from your home folks. I purposely did not say much to your mother about it, because I was afraid of unnerving her. I tried to appear as cheerful as I could, so as not to depress her. She is very brave to have given her 3 sons so uncomplainingly. Women, such as she is, are the backbone of England. She fights for her country in the person of her sons, and suffers far more than they. All my love and a great big kiss. It seems strange here without you. From your own little Mila.
Springtime in France found both Arthur and George laid low with measles.
My dear father, you'll probably have had a note from Mary telling you I'm in hospital with measles. I've been a bit off colour for the last few days, and yesterday the cause became clear, so I was sent down here where they isolate the infectious cases. I must have caught it from a patient whom I had nearly 3 weeks ago. Mine is a very light attack, and the worst of it is already over. But I suppose I'll be kept here for isolation for another fortnight, so you might address your next letter here. I suppose things are very quiet at home. Have any of the women of the district mobilised? I think the move a good one. Why not women as postmen, concierges, clerks, footmen, butlers, packers, shopmen, etc., where at present these jobs are held by men? I wish I could hear a better accounts of Kathleen's health. She really requires a good rest, I expect, and that is always a difficult matter. With much love to all, your affectionate son, Arthur.
My dear father, unluckily I followed Arthur's bad example and have a light attack of measles. We had just moved billets yet again nearer to the firing line. The battalion was again in the trenches when the rash appeared on me, and I had to beat a retreat by motor ambulance to the clearing hospital, and thence, after one night, by train to this place. It is disappointing to be shelved at this moment, when it is evident that big affairs have begun their progress. I'm glad there was time for me to see just a little of things before I fell victim to this complaint. I went up to the trenches 3 times, and though things were quiet, I have at least been under mild fire. I'm glad of that, not because it's a thing in itself to engender feelings of joy and happiness, quite the reverse, in fact, but because the boys up there will be case-hardened veterans when I see them again at the end of the month or so, and it would be humiliating to have to join them an utter greenhorn. A march up to the trenches is a strange experience. The country for the last few miles is scarred and desolate. Almost every building bears the mark of shell fire, some slightly, while many are mere wrecks. Here and there a peasant goes about his business in the fields, heedless of the whistle of stray bullets. I am delighted with the action of the London County Council regarding the tram strike. No words can describe the bitter feeling of every soldier here towards the man who stays at home and expects to suffer no hardship, even monetary. It is impossible for people who have not actually seen it to realise anything of the enormous hardships and risks and suffering, mental and physical, that men endure in the front lines in the war. The behaviour of a striker, no matter what his trade may be, appears to us out here as brutally callous and cynically devilish. Love to all, from your affectionate son, George.
In mid-May, tram workers in London went on strike, demanding a war bonus, prompted by the rising cost of living. The response of London County Council was to sack all men of military age, telling them to volunteer for the armed forces. The Battle of Festubert took place on the Western Front from 9th to 18th May, in which the Civil Service Rifles received their baptism of fire. They held the line to the south of the heavy fighting around Festubert, but failed to break through the German defences. It was here that they suffered their first significant casualties.
George was in hospital recovering from measles and so missed the battle. In May, Arthur, by now fully recovered from measles, wrote to his mother, giving her some idea of his work at the hospital.
My dear mother, we have a continuous flow of patients in and out of hospital, often taking in 200 or more and sending on a like number in one day. All incomers have to have a good bath, all their bits disinfected, and the deficiencies made good. A diagnosis made, In the army, that seems to be regarded as more important than treatment. Suitable food and treatment given, and a decision made as to whether each man will be fit within a specified time, and if not, whether he can travel, sitting or lying, to England. As convoys come and go at a few hours' notice, you may imagine the whole business means plenty of organisation and rapid work. The net result is that we are working much more as a clearing hospital than as a base hospital. I've had many of these gas cases. Not the worst kind, but bad enough. Nothing can bring home to one more utterly the debased nature of the Germans, and no treatment can be too harsh for them. This Lusitania blow makes one still more angry. I'm afraid the USA are too intent on keeping themselves out of this war to join in crushing utterly these fiends. Of course, it would mean practically a civil war was first for them. It's been wet and cold here for the last few days. I expect the garden at home begins to look bright. I'd so like even a few hours there and try to forget the war for a while. I do hope the government will now concentrate on munitions of every kind. They seem to have been just as slow as the general public to grasp the magnitude of our task. I'd like to see them take in a few representative men of other parties so as to form a truly national government. Perhaps that will come later. The home news lately has been very interesting. I have great hopes that a national government will show more vigour. If they don't, the outlook will be very bad. With much love to all, from your loving son, Arthur.
On 7th May, the ocean liner Lusitania was torpedoed and sunk by a German U-boat, causing the deaths of over 1,000 passengers and crew. On 25th May, a coalition ministry was formed in the government. On 31st May, the first German airship raid took place in London. 7 people were killed and 35 injured.
Juliet wrote to her father to reassure him about zeppelins and sleeping on the roof.
My dear father, don't be alarmed about the zeppelins. We all feel quite safe with our anti-aircraft guns so near, with a 5-mile range. And anyway, if you think of the millions of houses in London, it would be rather a piece of bad luck if it were to hit on number one, the Grove. I expect people in Worcestershire are far more nervous about zeppelins for Londoners than Londoners are themselves. It often happens that way. I don't sleep on the roof regularly, and if you really would be happier, I won't anymore. I must fly now. With love, your affectionate daughter, Juliet E. Sladden.
Arthur wrote to Juliet in mid-June. As a result of a zeppelin raid, he was now going to insure his property against aircraft damage.
My dear Juliet, I gather that you were not so very far from the Zepp. No doubt most of you are, like the men in the trenches, quite philosophical as to these things. It's the only way. I'm very glad, however, that at this time Mary is not in London. A quiet and uneventful home is so necessary at present. She seems to keep very well and is still at her old home. No news of letting the flat. I'm afraid it may be empty for a good many weeks. I'm insuring the contents against aircraft damage. I suppose 12 months ago, one would have smiled at taking such a step. But we've most of us learned a lot in 10 months and probably have much more to learn. When do you get home this summer? They'll want you there to keep them all bright. Good night, old lady. With much love, your affectionate brother, Arthur.
An Evening with the Sladdens, 1915, Part 1. The cast was Julius, Anthony Miller, Eugenie, Patsy Miller, Jack, Tony Spinks, May and Ethel, Jane Neal, Kathleen, Sandra Sparrow, Arthur, Chris Smith, George, Robin Neal, Cyril, Terry Sparrow, Juliet, Martha Murray, Mila, Bella Richards. The narrator was Will Dallimore, and the official voice Valerie McGann. The director was Maureen Spinks. An Evening with the Sladdens was a Badsy Society production.